Hey, welcome to another episode of The Breakdown. We're glad you are with us this week. It's a busy week, and we're leading up into Easter.
It's a lot, man. We missed you all last week, and it has been a busy couple of weeks getting ready for Easter stuff and helicopters and praying for weather to hold the way we need it to. And It is the busiest time of year. I think it's busier than Christmas, and
for sure,
that's all part of the fun, and we will earn our vacations here in the coming months. So
it's fun, though. It's exciting. We're doing some new stuff, and I think that is cool.
Yeah,
it brings busyness, like you said, with it, but it's all good stuff.
Yeah,
I like prepping for this and then getting to experience it and enjoy it with families. So it's definitely not a bad thing.
Definitely not.
Nope. But we're here to talk about Matthew.
Yeah,
we're in the book of Matthew. Will be for a long time.
Absolutely.
This week we were in Matthew 9. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the importance of having Jesus close.
Yeah, yeah. Having him in the room, having him in the space of our lives, you know, the room being kind of metaphorical, but also in the latter part of this story, literal. Jesus is in the room with a young girl, Jairus's daughter that he raises from the dead. And pretty cool story of Jesus doing a miracle on the way to a miracle, you know, always having time, showing compassion for people was another big focus we had for the message. But the bottom line of this message was the difference it can make when we picture, when we experience, when we have a mindset of Jesus truly being with us in the spaces we are in.
Yeah.
And that if that is true, and if we believe that's true, that can change everything. You know, if we really believe that, I think it's a faith thing, just like it was for the people that were experiencing Jesus in their space, whether it's the woman with the issue of blood, the menstrual bleeding that had gone on for, I don't know, was it 12 years off the top of my head? But plus, you know, Jairus, who's come to Jesus saying, I believe that if you come, you can save my daughter. Yeah. So it certainly made the difference to have him in the room. So that's what we're talking about.
All right. So let's talk about the first story, and then we'll get through it.
For sure.
This guy comes up to Jesus, and he says that his daughter is ill. Did he say she's ill, or she is dying or dead?
So in Matthew's version, yes, she's already died. And we find out about that in Mark and Luke in the middle part of the story. So as Jesus is on the way, a messenger comes from the house of Jairus and says, don't trouble the teacher anymore. Your daughter has died.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, Jesus is like, I don't know which one it's in, but I think this is where he says, just have faith and believe, something along those lines.
Yeah. Your faith has made her well.
And yeah. Yeah. It's like something in there. The verbiage of that is like, basically, you know, don't worry about that. Just believe. Right. So it's pretty cool, the different versions you get of this. People say, well, it's different. What is that? You know, that doesn't seem good for continuity. I mean, Matthew has taken the story and he's compressed it. You know, he's telling the story in a way that still gets to the meat and the heart of the message and what Jesus did. But instead of, you know, including all of those level of details, he just says, you know, well, she had died. Well, she was dying when Jairus came, right? I think that seems to be the more consistent narrative, at least from the other Gospels, is that she was not yet dead, but she was dead by the time before Jesus got there.
Correct.
So that's the part.
Either way, it still shows the faith of Jairus.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, 100%.
The point, I think, Matthew is one of the points Matthew is making here. So he hears this, and he's going to walk towards Jairus' house. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, another miracle happens on the way to this miracle. This lady who has bled for 12 years touches the hem of Jesus' cloak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that question is one of the funniest questions Jesus asks. He's like, who touched me?
Yeah.
And his disciples are like, what do you mean? There are people all around us in this crowded space. Everybody is touching you.
Yeah.
But
and I think one of them says that in one of the Gospels, they? Like that everybody's... Yeah. Now, in Matthew's Gospel, he doesn't give us any, really, of those details, right? But in the other Gospels, I'm pretty sure we get that exact verbiage of, like, everyone is touching you, you know, or everyone has touched you, you know, basically.
He uses the... someone came and touched him, and he says something about... the power.
Yeah, power has gone out from me.
Yeah. And that's what kind of how he knows this isn't just like a normal touch.
Mm-hmm.
But then he has this interaction with her. because she was saying to herself, if I only touch his garment, I will be made well. Yeah. Then in 22, Jesus turned and seeing her, he said, take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well. And instantly the woman was made well.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, her faith heals her.
Well, and you know, I talked about this in the message, but much like the leper from several weeks ago that we discussed, this issue of blood, this menstrual bleeding problem, which again, we don't know all the issues of it and don't fully understand it and don't need to. Yeah. But what we do know, and I do think what we need to understand is that this made her ritually unclean. So it kept her from being able to be in the temple, kept her from being able to gather with her people to be able to worship God at the temple, you know, or in their gathering space, right? This was such a critical, you know, not being able to go to your synagogue, not being able to go with your people and be able to worship God was a major problem, a major issue, a major life problem. And not to mention the obvious physical effects of this, right? You know, just not very, very difficult. So Jesus has really unlocked that part of her life that has really been locked down. Yeah. So it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a freeing. It's not only that she's physically healed, like you say, it's this idea that she's now back and a part of the community of believers that she's worshiped with.
Right.
And I mean, we've experienced this through COVID and the fact of once we were able to get back and worship with our believers, our whole demeanor changes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason scripture tells us not to forsake the assembly. Yeah. There are good things that come of that. There's a closeness that's drawn towards God when we meet together and worship.
Community and connection and the presence of other believers, you know, humans, just being around other people, I think was so critical for us during that season. We learned, it's interesting, all the things that we learned through that difficult time. And in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't that difficult, right? When we think about the things that have happened in the world, scheme of things, it wasn't that difficult. But for most of us, you know, it was an experience of our lifetimes. Correct. And it taught us a lot. And that's definitely the need for that level of community was certainly one of them.
Yeah. One of the things that I find interesting in how Matthew portrays this of a miracle happening on the way to a miracle is that Jesus took the time to do this.
Yeah.
Like he knew that lady was going to be there. He could have bypassed it. He's like, I have something more important to do.
Yeah. And raising a little girl from the dead is more important.
Like that seems like a cooler miracle.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for us, and oftentimes even in ministry, like we're busy doing these things that are good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Easter egg hunts are fun. They're good for the community. They get people connected with us. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if we only focus on that and things come up during that time period of like, oh, this person called and needs to talk about X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Take the time and do that.
That's right.
And I think even for young families too, oftentimes I get in this mindset of I have to do X, Y, and Z. And so when one of my kids comes and interrupts those things, like it's an inconvenience. And so using those moments as a teaching moment to stop, pause, and show them that they are important and show them the love of Christ is, I think something I take away from this is that Jesus took the time to meet people where they were.
One of the things we did with our children when they were younger is we wanted them to always know that when we were together at church on a Sunday, that they could come and talk to us. Mm. Because for me and for Abby, you know, we would be talking with people, or I would be coming out to the door at the end of the service or whatever it was, and people were talking, and, you know, my attention was elsewhere most of the time when I was at church. But we told our kids, you can always come and talk to mom or dad, but here's what you need to do. Yeah. You come up and you put your hand on our back, and we'll know,
that's good.
We'll look and we'll know it's you, and you can put your hand on our back and wait. And wait until we acknowledge you and then talk. Because, you know, when you're a little kid, you just run up and talk to mom and dad. We said, we want to hear from you. And you can always come and talk to us. Don't ever feel like you can't. But come and put your hand on us and then wait. And so our kids got very good at that. All three of them would do the same thing. They'd come put their hand on you and you'd look and you'd see it's them. And you just kind of give them a little nod. And they would wait. And I would finish my conversation with the person I was like giving attention to and talking to. And then I would talk to them. And, you know, that was a way to help them know that they were valued and precious, but to also, you know, it's kind of teach them manners and, you know, that, again, I'm also ministering to these other people, and this is a part of what I need to be doing. Doesn't mean you aren't a priority. Yeah. If they had some critical issue, I mean, they would just tell us, right? You know, if somebody was bleeding and dying, they would just say, yeah, they're just got their hand on our back. But no, I think that was a good practice we put in place because we sort of had to, because we saw that, you know, when they were little, they just run up and talk over top of people, and we didn't want them doing that either. So
yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So Jesus heals this lady, and they continue on, and they get to Jairus's house. Mm-hmm. And how does Matthew talk about the people that were... Okay, and when Jesus came to the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the crowd making a commotion. That's how mine reads. Kind of talk about that, because that's really... It's not a cultural thing that happens in our time period.
These were most likely professional mourners. I'd say very likely professional mourners. And people would hire these people, pay them something to be there at their home to make this kind of great cacophony of noise, you know. So they're pitching a fit, right? Yeah. On purpose to help, I suppose, accentuate, bring attention to, notify the community that this family has lost a loved one. In the African-American community, because I don't see this as much in most other communities, but you will see signs on the side of the road near the home where somebody, because oftentimes they will bring the body to the home. And it will lie in state or in wait, right, for another, whether it's a funeral visitation at a church, or sometimes it's only in the home and then they go do the funeral. That's going to depend on the individual family, of course. But my whole point with this is you will see a sign on the road that says, please slow down, you know. I don't remember the exact verbiage, but there's been...
I've seen them here. That's something new to me, because I've never seen that in Louisiana. Right. It might happen, but
I've seen through the years, but, you know, it is conveying to the community that this family has lost somebody that they love and care about, right? So be respectful of them, be mindful of their loss, you know, I guess don't drive by here, you know, popping wheelies or blowing your horn or doing anything foolish. Just
keep those camels under control.
Keep that under control. So all that to say, these mourners were serving that kind of function to let the community know of their loss and to kind of be with them in the midst of that mourning. It's funny because what has become a Jewish practice these days is something called sitting shiva. And that is where you just go and you sit with the family that's lost somebody and you don't talk. You're just there. Which my wife really loves. She's like, I think that's the best practice. Because any of us who have tried to comfort somebody when they've lost somebody, there's not a lot you can say other than, hey, I'm really sorry for your loss and I love you and I'm here. And that's probably where you should shut up, right? Unless they're talking to you, because that is actually how shiva works, is that you don't talk unless you're talked to. So you're going to give them space to mourn, but then if they talk to you or they ask you a question or they're processing something with you, then it's okay. But otherwise, you don't talk. Now, I think that's great, right? But it's very different than this practice, which is just a kind of interesting thing. Maybe that developed over the years where they're like, well, this is dumb. Why are we doing it this way? Let's, you know, what if we tried this a better way? And maybe it developed over time. I don't know. So, yeah, Jesus comes in and basically tells him to cut it out, you know. The girl's not dead. She's only asleep.
And the people laughed at him. Yeah, it says in 24, and they laughed at him. But then the crowd went outside. He went in, took her by the hand, and the girl arose.
They knew what dead people looked like, especially these professional mourners, right? Whether they had seen the girl or not, if they had, they certainly knew, because death was something they were near all the time. At the very least, they knew that the family had confirmed that the girl had died, because that's why they were there, right? So they laughed at our Lord. And as one of the points I made in the message is that, you know, people will sometimes laugh at us or make fun of our faith or whatever it is. And, you know, just a good reminder, like they laughed at Jesus, you're going to be okay, right? Yeah. Jesus can get laughed at. You're going to get laughed at. It'll be all right.
Yeah. What is he saying? The Beatitudes, blessed are those who are persecuted.
Because of me.
Because of him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they did it the same to the prophets that came before. And so it's an expectation that we have. I mean, the worst somebody's going to do is laugh at me.
Yeah.
Then I've That's okay. Like, I'm okay with that.
Move on.
Yeah. But keeping Jesus close. Mm-hmm. I just find it interesting, like, how Matthew says that Jesus goes here. He takes her by the hand. Mm-hmm. Like, Jairus sees the importance of going and seeking out Jesus.
Yeah.
So that he can be in a vicinity of him. I know, I think we talked about Matthew and Luke said that Jesus on the way said that she's healed, or in one instance he says that. Mm-hmm. But still, Jairus had to go and ask for that healing.
Right.
He had to be in a vicinity of him. I think about just oftentimes, like, that's sometimes that's the last thing I want to do when I'm going through a hard time. Mm. Like, I'll get there, but the first thing I want to do is either, and maybe Jairus did this, I want to handle it, or I want to think about it. And instead of just going straight to God, I want to do something about it. Right. And here he shows that he has faith that Jesus can heal them by going to him.
Yeah. Jesus in the room makes all the difference.
Correct.
And this was a big focus of the message is that if we will believe, if we will trust, that actually having Jesus involved in process with us in our life, and specifically we talked about marriage, our relationships is maybe just the way to say it. And we tried to give this visual illustration to people about, hey, look, imagine you're in an argument with your spouse and Jesus is sitting there on the sofa while you're arguing with your spouse. Yeah. That argument will look very different, right? That disagreement will look very different than it would if we weren't thinking that. And that what we often want to do is be like, Jesus, you wait right here, and then take the spouse or the person, whoever it is that you really want to let them have it, into the other room. Yeah. And then you kind of close the door and you're letting them have it. You look over and Jesus is in that room too, right? Jesus is in every space. And I think that when we process our lives that way, it reminds us of what we're supposed to be like and what we're supposed to be doing. But in my opinion, it also reminds us of what Jesus is capable of when he is in that room. Yeah. He can change my mindset. He can change my heart for you, because I'm going to see you more in the way that Jesus wants me to, right?
Yeah.
I'm even going to receive you more in the way that Jesus wants me to, rather than me being so bent out of shape or so focused on my own point or my own issue or the things I'm upset about. When I recognize Jesus in that room, it changes things.
It does.
Right? Yeah. So that I think is an important visualization for all of us. And I think it's backed up in this story about Jairus and his daughter, that when Jesus comes in the room, man, you know, dead little girls come to life.
Yeah.
Talitha kum, little girl, I say, get up, right? And I just love I think it's Mark that records the Aramaic in that, and it's beautiful, beautiful.
I like it. Anything else you want to add to it that you didn't get to hit on in your sermon?
I think we covered the message, and you know, hopefully there's some practical things in there for folks. And you know, picture this week Jesus in the room with you. And really let that affect your relationships and your connectedness to him and the way that you love and care about other people. I think it's a great opportunity.
Amen.
Amen.
What you got going on, man? What are you excited about?
Well, definitely, if this weather will hold on Saturday, I'm excited about a helicopter and eggs and kids and families. And, you know, I think we've got a good process in place for how we're getting information. I know you've been working on that, and Anna and others. To be sure we're prepared to connect with people and then follow up with people, to really have this be more than just an egg hunt, but really something that's catalytic for helping people find a church home and discipleship, right? Because that's a big part of why we do what we do. Look, you know, part of why we do this is for fun, and that's good.
We like to have fun.
That's great. Not anything wrong with that. Giving kids eggs and candy and having a blast, man, that's awesome, man. That's definitely a part of this. Serving our families and the families in our community, no doubt. But the other part of it is we see this as a great opportunity to engage those families, right? And to ultimately disciple those families.
Yeah.
We've seen other families come through the year through events like this, or through the years through events like this, because we made these connections. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is that sometimes they may not come back. They may not come to Easter this year, but 2 years from now, they show up, and the things they say are, well, you know, I came to your egg drop. and you guys did such a good job with that, or blah, 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 blah. And when we started thinking about where we should get back into church, we should get involved again, we thought about this church. Mm. So I've heard that a lot through the years. Mm. So we try to think both short-term and long-term about the potential for increase from this, and the potential for blessing and discipleship and so on and so forth. So yeah, man, I'm pumped about that. How about you?
I think we didn't do a podcast last week.
That's right.
We started soccer. Oh. I'm coaching soccer with I-9.
Wow.
On Saturdays on our campus.
Yeah.
3 and 4 year olds, man.
I'll pray for you, man.
We just wanted to see if Adeline would like it, and we have 5 kids on our team. We had fun. Our first game and practice was fun. Like, they're kids.
Yeah.
They definitely have no clue about soccer.
Just set them free, man.
Let them run. But it was fun because one kid we found really liked goalie, and so we gave everybody a chance, and we put him back in there, and he really enjoyed that.
Okay.
We had a good little forward, and then there was Adeline and this other little girl, and this other little girl took Adeline by the hand, and at one point they were skipping around the field.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were just having a good old time. Yeah. But it was fun. It's cool to get to connect with people that have never been on our campus.
Yeah.
I find oftentimes, like, the people that I'm always in contact with our church people,
right?
And so to have a portion of my life where I get to talk and hang out with people who don't know Jesus,
right,
or maybe who do and just aren't a part of our church, mm-hmm, is really cool. I think it's gonna have, we're gonna have some good conversation.
That's awesome.
Everything seemed to go well the first practicing game. So.
Okay, man.
We have 6 more.
That's good. I wouldn't expect it will always be that and 5 year olds playing soccer, but good luck.
But it's fun because the way they have it set up is the coaches get to be on the field, and so we get to show our players which way to go.
Absolutely.
Like, we'll tell them
to stop
and say, hey, you're going towards the wrong goal, and we give that opportunity for learning.
Right.
And I think at that age, that's really, it's not about winning.
Yeah, have fun and kick the ball.
Exactly.
That's great.
So let's learn which way we need to go this season.
Listen, if you can teach them that by the end of the year, you've done something. Yeah. So
I'm excited about that. I didn't think I would enjoy it as much as I did, and I did. So.
That's awesome, dude. I love it.
Yep.
On all fronts.
All right. We'll see you guys soon. Next week is...
it's Easter week.
It's going to be Easter week.
Can't wait.
So prep. This week is Palm Sunday. Be reading through that. We look forward to doing that with our church. Mm-hmm. And we hope that you have a great week.
See you guys.